I reported to a squadron in Quonset Point, Rhode Island, which is on Narragansett Bay, just across from Newport and Naval War College. And when I got there, the squadron had Bearcats, but they're getting rid of the Bearcats. As good an airplane as it was for a particular mission, it was hard to operate on the air carrier, but they had plenty of Corsairs. We deployed for, after I got aboard, deployed for the Mediterranean in the summer of 1950 with F-4U-4s. At the about halfway through the deployment, the North Koreans invaded South Korea, and we were eventually sent around to Korea. We were in Beirut, Lebanon at the time we got the word we were going to go, so we went from Lebanon across the Mediterranean and back into Norfolk, Virginia, where we spent 10 days working on the ship and working on aircraft. Then from there down through the Panama Canal up to San Diego, then out to Hawaii, from Hawaii out to Japan, and then into the operating area off the east coast of Korea, north or south, depending upon where the action was. On the 4th of December, we were involved in full-time operations against the North Koreans who were pushing the South Koreans and the Allied forces to the south. Then, without warning, except that the Chinese had threatened the United States that they'd enter the war if we got to be a threat to the Chinese. And that did happen just after Thanksgiving of 1950. Their numbers were such that the Allied troops were outnumbered about as much as, in some places, 10 to 1. So we were operating as much as we could all through the day with three aircraft carriers, sometimes four, depending upon their availability. On Sunday, the 4th of December, who's described, Jesse and I were two of a member of flights up in the vicinity of the Chosin Reservoir. The reservoir is in the mountains of North Korea. The mountains up there were about 3,500 feet above sea level. It was in the middle of, getting to be the middle of the winter. The temperatures on the ground were as low as 35 below zero at night. We did everything we could to help the troops on the ground. It was an armed reconnaissance flight we had on this particular day, which incidentally was in the afternoon. In the halfway through the flight, one of the flight called out to Jesse Brown that he apparently was losing fuel. And Jesse came up shortly after that and said that he was losing power and was going to probably have to crash someplace. Jesse did crash in a fairly open area, but it was not the side of a mountain, but it was in the rough territory under about 2 feet of snow. As soon as he crashed, we saw that the canopy, which was open, which is routine procedure doing takeoff and landing in those days of still prop planes, the canopy was open at the time he hit the ground, and it slammed shut as a result of the crash. The engine had broken away. He had opened the canopy after he stopped and waved to us to let us know that he was alive, but for some reason didn't get out of the cockpit. And there was smoke coming out from under the cowling and gave us a great deal of concern that smoke would develop into fire. So our flight leader had left us and called for a helicopter, and while he was off our radio frequency and was not in contact with us, the smoke for a short while got to be more intense than it had been, so I got quite concerned about that and decided that I'd make a wheels-up crash landing close to his airplane and just pull him out of the cockpit and wait for the helicopter which we had been assured was on the way, but it'd be probably half an hour before we could get up there. And I was concerned that that smoke may have developed in the plane and caught Jesse before we could get him out of the cockpit. Well, I landed ended up about 100 yards away from his plane and got to his plane and had some difficulty climbing up on the wing to look into the cockpit because of the snow made the bottom, the soles of my boots just like ice. In the meantime, when Jesse saw me coming, he very calmly said to me, "Tom, we've got to figure out a way to get out of here." Well, you can see how there's not a horizontal surface on this airplane. The wing comes down from the fuselage and about 6 feet out, it comes up again. So any movement I made had to be supported by grabbing something on the airplane, because I just couldn't do anything without a handhold of some sort. I was able to climb up in the fuselage and look into the cockpit and saw that the reason he didn't get out was because of the way the aircraft was buckled at the fuselage, at the cockpit. His leg was pinned in there and he couldn't move. He had taken his helmet off and he had taken his gloves off. Took his gloves off, I think, to help unbuckle his parachute. He took his helmet off for whatever reason. So I had a wool cap in my flight suit and I pull that down over his head and ears. And there was nothing I could do about the gloves except that I did have a scarf in my flight suit pocket. Took that out and wrapped it around his hands, which were already beginning to get frozen in the short time that he was on the ground. I got the word that the helicopter was on the way, and in about 15 or 20 minutes, one did appear. And it took a while for him to land. When he reached us, he circled around for at least 5 minutes before deciding to land. And I was concerned that he was concerned about the wind. So I had a smoke bomb and a flare attached to my life jacket, which was the usual equipment we carried. And the helicopter landed. And I found out later on he was concerned about setting that airplane down because it had engine trouble, and he was afraid that if the engine quit or started sliding down the side of the mountain, we'd have been in tough shape. Well, the helicopter pilot and I worked together trying to free Jesse, and there's no way to do it. We just couldn't get the leverage to do anything significant. And in the meantime, trying to talk with Jesse, it was quite difficult. After a while, I think he was losing consciousness. He didn't respond to a lot of what I was saying. And I think he was under a lot of pressure. I think he was in a state of shock. And the helicopter told me that he had to leave because he couldn't fly after dark, and dusk was approaching. So we had to tell Jesse that we had to go get some equipment. We couldn't pull him out of the cockpit with what we had. And his last words were before we left was, "If anything happens to him, you tell his wife, Daisy, how much he loved her." The helicopter took me down to a base camp the Marines had at the foot of the Chosen Reservoir. He landed there to get instructions from superiors as to what to do from there. In the meantime, there were Marines who had been struggling across the now frozen Chosen Reservoir, who were absolutely exhausted. They had been fighting for 3 or 4 days up to this time. They were desperate to get out of that hostile area and hoped to get a ride from us to safety, which was obviously impractical. And not only impractical, but impossible. So we went to another base camp about 10 miles away, and I spent the next 3 nights there with the Marines. with the Chinese communists and the North Korean troops close enough so that we were concerned that if they had attacked us, we wouldn't have had radio communication. So I was waked up all through the night with them by one of the Marines starting the jeep with the radio on it so that when we really needed it, it would have been reliable and could use it. Well, to make a long story short, I was taken back out to the ship, and the captain, who had, because of communications, didn't really know what was happening ashore. And here it was 3 days later, December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day. And the decision finally was to send some aircraft up and napalm Jesse's plane and mine. And when they found the wreckage of both our airplanes, Jesse was still in the cockpit. He was given a warrior's funeral by dropping napalm on his airplane. I was taken back out to the ship. I was already on the ship. But that deployment went on for a couple more weeks, and then our ship was... We came from the Atlantic Fleet. We were only on loan to the Pacific Fleet from the Atlantic. And we were so short of carriers and other ships and the other services of resources they needed to fight a war. But we came back home, leaving the area on the 20th of January. And then the rest is history. I got called several months later by the White House and was presented the Medal of Honor by President Truman. But it was a tough war. The war went on 2.5 years after that. You probably know how it ended up almost as a stalemate 3 years after it had started. But South Korea was not lost. South Korea, it turns out, through all these years, to be the most industrially advanced, one of the most industrially advanced countries in the world. And North Korea is an absolute basket case, is a threat to us.
Anything else you want to say?
No. Do you have any questions?
Why don't you join me in standing, not just for this the talk, which was great, but to recognize a true American hero.
You stay there.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you.
I don't know that there are any words that can express our appreciation. They're just not adequate. And we do appreciate what you did and appreciate what each of you who served. I remember myself, as far as I was concerned, I was finishing high school when you were out saving the country. And I really do appreciate it. Yes, Doug?
They just announced they're naming a ship.
They are. What is it?
It's funny. I called him and I said, God, this is just great. They're naming a ship after Tom Hudner. And he said, yeah, it's not an aircraft carrier, though.
Well, maybe next time. Anyway, I hope that each of you has enjoyed the presentation. We were going to do some stuff on Wildcat. There's another thing going on as we speak. The Navy is recovering a Wildcat from Lake Michigan. Chuck Thornhill is here, he's participating in it. And it's fortunately the Navy has sort of changed its attitude and is now seeing the value in what is being done to preserve our heritage and our flying heritage. That's what the EA Warbirds of America is all about. Thank you all very much for coming today. By the way, the museum shop is over there. You have to go out that way sooner or later, so go buy something. And again, we thank Captain Hudner for his efforts and for his speech today. Thank you very much.